Joining me this morning on the Sportsnet Hot Stove, it is Dave Zarum and Donovan Bennett, a couple of guys who can really get into the Raptors talk as they go into a very, roller coaster of an offseason would be a good word for it. Could be crazy, could be not, but there's a lot of questions that Masai Ujiri and company have to answer. Thanks for doing this morning, fellas.
Yeah, no worries.
Good to have you on. Donovan, you might want to turn your mic on. There you go.
Anytime.
So, the Raptors and Masai Ujiri and his end of season news conference was wild earlier this week. And maybe that was to be expected after the way they crashed out against the Cleveland Cavaliers, really giving LeBron and company not too much to worry about in their second round series. But Masai, he starts it off with, "This is BS. What am I really going to tell you here today?" And then he goes on, kind of drops bombs throughout the entire 40 minutes that he speaks. I think the obvious headliner was, "We need a culture reset." What do you think he meant by culture reset, Dave?
Well, I mean, it's kind of confusing in that when you hear those kind of words, you think kind of clearing the deck, starting over. But then he didn't come close to committing to that. You know, he mentioned still being in Casey's corner, allowing Casey to be the one kind of overseeing this culture reset. He mentioned wanting Lowry back if the terms are right. So you hear culture reset, you expect him to say, you know, we're going to start over. We need a fresh start here. Yet I'm not entirely sure that's the direction the Raptors are going to go, or if that's even a direction that they can go in a proper way. So it was kind of a lot of mixed messages. What came across clearly, as it should have, was the guy's frustrated. What he saw in the playoffs is not something to give him hope heading forward.
Yeah, and I don't think any fan really was given a lot of hope with what they saw against Cleveland. Your analogy of culture reset, Donovan?
Yeah, I think it's tough to discern what he meant because, to be honest, I don't think he knows what he meant. I don't think he knows what he should do. I don't think he knows what the best.
He knew he wanted
action.
To say culture reset, though. Like, I think
that
was
he
was thinking
he
of points that he wanted to talk about, and that had to be one of them. You don't say culture reset without thinking about it.
I think, to be honest, I think he was so all over the place that he was just saying things off of the top of his head. Mm-hmm. And I think the most poignant thing he said is when he started the press conference and he said, "This is all BS," because he has no answers for people, and really he can't, because he doesn't know his situation with Kyle Lowry. He doesn't necessarily know what the market's going to look like as far as other free agents, whether they opt in, opt out, so on and so forth. And furthermore, I mean, when you're immersed into the playoffs in a series, your sole thought is, okay, what do we do to win? Forget about this series, this next game, mm-hmm. as far as how you construct your roster. Now he needs to take a step back and look at the entirety of the season, not just, you know, the last four games, but also how he projects this team going forward, you know, next year, year after. And when you don't really know what this draft is going to look like necessarily, you don't know what the free agents are going to look like, I don't know if you can really give a poignant answer 48 hours after the season's over.
Yeah, you also don't know what the free agent market's going to be like. I mean, after what we saw last summer, you wonder how many GMs are going to be hesitant to pull the trigger on those kind of big money deals in the same way we saw last year. But one thing that he did say, and again, these are all kind of like vague terms that he's saying it in, but the message is there nonetheless, that I think everyone can get behind, was the notion of having to change the style of play. Mm-hmm. You know, again, like, it's frustrating because he got into no specifics in terms of what they want outside of people shoot more threes now, so we need to be on board that train. But at least recognizing that, you know, as currently constructed, whether it's the roster or the offensive schemes, whatever it is, the way the Raptors play might get them wins in the regular season, but doesn't work when you're trying to reach that kind of title level, especially when you consider the teams who they have to beat to get there.
Yeah, and they had just over 101 points per 100 possessions this year in the playoffs. They were 14th best of playoff teams in that stat. And that's something over the last 4 years in which the Raptors have made the playoffs. That's something that is recurring every single year in the playoffs.
And it's not even just the scoring. It's the way you're manufacturing points. And I guess glass half full, at least as obvious as it is for everyone, at least he's coming out and saying, you know, I recognize that this isn't working. Yeah. You know, you have to be able to move the ball better. You can't have the lowest assist rate in 27 years and expect to do big things right now in the NBA.
But he did also say, and this is kind of why his comments were tough to read because he was all over the place, that he's not one just to follow the trend that everyone else is mm-hmm. currently doing, and maybe they'll be the one to set whatever the new trend is. And they went and acquired three-point shooters in Ibaka and Tucker, so it's not like this roster doesn't have them. And when we watch these playoffs, you know, the Rockets are a five-out team who hoist threes, and that worked until it didn't work. And the Spurs are a traditional team that plays two bigs, and they found a way to win a series. So I'm not certain, given the way Masai is, that he's necessarily going to follow the trend. I think it's going to depend on what his options are. If somehow on draft day, which happens to be before free agency, you know, and Kyle Lowry's not returning his phone calls, and he's able to trade up for Lonzo Ball, well, then maybe they will be a three-point shooting team yeah. next year. But if DeMar DeRozan come October 30th or whenever the season opens next year is still your starting shooting guard, you're only going to be a three-point shooting team to a certain extent because he had the highest usage rate of his career last year, and he doesn't take three-point shots. So I think you are kind of what you are as far as that's concerned, and I'm not sure where the other three-point shots would have come if they're catering to their best player, which was DeMar.
Yeah, and they also couldn't, like, when they did get those three-point shots, they couldn't hit them if their life depended on it. It seemed, and their life kind of actually did depend on it, and they still couldn't do it. But when I think of the offseason, and you're right in the sense that, you know, thinking back to what Ujiri said on that day, he would say something and then he would kind of walk it back a little bit. And then he'd say another thing and then he'd kind of walk it back a little mm-hmm. bit. He left every single door open because, you know what, his offseason and I think the Raptors offseason probably all depends on what Kyle Lowry decides to do. If he gets a contract from the Raptors that he still likes, if he wants to maybe go somewhere where he thinks is greener pastures and he may have a better chance at a ring. That's all dependent on what Lowry does. Ujiri's next move is all dependent on the decision that comes with Kyle Lowry, no?
And the decision that Ujiri has to make. I mean, I think he left all the doors open because all the doors are open right now. I mean, including with what you're going to do with Lowry. I think, yeah, heading into the postseason, a lot of the discussion was that, you know, does Ujiri want to re-sign Lowry or not? And it was only until that season-ending press conference from Lowry where he was, what's the term, I guess, non-committal about coming yeah. back to Toronto, that it became a little more clearly like, oh, yeah, this isn't just the Raptors' decision to make. Kyle might really be seriously weighing playing elsewhere. And it certainly sounded like that. So, yeah, there's I agree that Lowry's the first domino to fall. I mean, in my opinion, I think it's a huge risk to re-sign him for the money that he's worth. Though I could see the flip side that there's no way you're going to get better by not bringing Kyle Lowry back. So I can't imagine the spot that Ujiri's in this season because you can go a million different directions. I mean, on Sportsnet.ca, we're going to have a choose your own adventure, be the GM interactive piece going up this week. And it's because you can go 70 different directions based on a number of questions. And it all starts with, do you re-sign Kyle Lowry?
Yeah. And I know Donovan on .ca, you wrote that the Raptors should let Lowry walk and not tear it all down.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it had nothing to do with money, like if this was Major League Baseball
right.
and there wasn't a cap and you could always kind of either just eat bad money or move it, then yeah, sign him. And you know what? We know that this is going to be a bad contract by the end, but, you know, We had a good contract for the last couple of years. It all comes out in the wash. Mm-hmm. But in the NBA, which is not a hard cap league, but a very punitive cap league, the way it is now with the salary tax, the repeater tax, and the tax apron, I just don't understand how you could pay Kyle Lowry the same amount of money this offseason as Steph Curry and Chris Paul and less money comparatively than Kyrie Irving, and then say to yourself, we can beat those teams with a lesser player at the same position, which is fastly becoming the most important position in the league, and say for sure we're going to be able to guess right on every other roster spot. Because that's pretty much what you have to do. If you are getting less value from your point guard and your max player, you basically have to get more value from the rest of your roster with the same amount of money. I just don't think it makes sense for a player who's not going to, I mean, he's coming off his best season, so I guess it's a little, it's not maybe fair to say he's not going to get better, but chances are he's not going to get better. He's going to be a depreciating asset, and in his prime, he's struggled to stay healthy. Having said that, you have his bird rights, which gives you an advantage that other teams don't. And you're not, you're, there are no other free agents that you'll be able to get that are going to give you that production, even at a cheaper price. The other options you're looking at are people like George Hill, which is still going to be expensive.
He's a $20 million player, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. So Drew Holiday, like who would be my choice, because at least he's 27 and you could talk yourself up to, I mean, he was an all-star once in a terrible, you know, Eastern Conference with a bad Philly team, but you could talk yourself into the fact that, well, Kyle Lowry wasn't an all-star when he got here. He was someone who was around the same age, same profile, and we turned him into an all-star. We can bet on our staff to have, you know, the development. So that would be my choice, but there are no great choices. That's why I think this offseason is super fascinating.
And part of what complicates it, just when we're talking about Lowry, first of all, like guys like Holiday, George Hill, all those teams in need of a point guard who know that they're not going to get Curry and know that they're not going to get Chris Paul. I mean, they're going to open the bank for those guys too. So I don't think there is like a decent affordable option at starting point guard on the free agent market, at least. And the thing that complicates it with Lowry is that there isn't that kind of heir apparent on the roster. I don't think. I mean, yeah. Corey Joseph was really solid when Lowry was out. He was good in that last game in the playoffs, in that game four loss. But I don't know if you can be totally comfortable going forward with him as your starting point guard. DeLon Wright, I really like his game. I like what he brings to the table, but he's 24, 25.
He's 25.
Yeah, he's 25.
He's older than Riccio.
So, I mean, like, what does that tell you? He's not going to be... I mean, he's going to get a lot better, but I don't think he's anywhere close to being a starter quality point guard right now.
He's not a useful piece.
He's a useful piece, but he's not like a centerpiece going forward. He's not a reason you can say, well, we can let Lowry walk because we have DeLon Wright and ditto Corey Joseph. So it's not like there's that internal kind of improvement you can have at that position, which really ties your hands. I mean, so who are you looking at then as your point guard if Lowry doesn't come back?